Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Friday, 10 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, I've got Wayne McCurry. We're going to chat that rejected Mediclinic bid. Also, we had, of course, the Mr. Price numbers. Dennis Okolo, looking at alternative assets. We've chatted to him before, and also earning UK sterling. And then some thoughts on gold. Is it doing what it should be doing, or is it disappointing us? I mean, there is all sorts of craziness, and gold is flat, but maybe flat is the new good so far year to date. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb is Remgro planning to exit from the JSC. The listing of Distell, there was the offer for Mediclinic distributing Discovery, First Rand, etc. Maybe ultimately that is their sort of medium-term plan. Business Day, ticket prices expected to soar as SA loses 40% airline capacity. Comair is now into liquidation. It is game over. If you had a ticket, as I did, you're now a creditor. You will get a small amount of money after a lot of years. And expect flying to become more expensive. Until, of course, someone tries another airline. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P down almost 2.5%, NASDAQ off 2.75%, Asia also red, Sydney down 0.9%, Tokyo off 1.4%, commodities red, gold $1,847, Brent $122.32 a barrel, platinum $968, palladium 1,938. Rand 1547. Top 40 opening call about 620 points down. That is 1%. That is 10 cent trades flat in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investment. Wayne, appreciate the early morning time. Let's quickly touch on that Mediclinic, an offer that had come from Remgro and partners to buy out Mediclinic, which ultimately had been rejected. The Mediclinic board said it doesn't value the company high enough.
Well, look, you never know where you're going to go with negotiations. I mean, of course, the first price that you offer is never your top price, and it's almost incumbent on any board to say, that's not enough, yeah. You want more, you're worth more. So this is the start of the whole process. But Mediclinic, I mean, obviously they all had a very tough time during lockdown, but the last set of results were good.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, we had all the hospital groups reported, a week or so ago. They were all decent. My sense was that Mediclinic probably was the standout of the three. And, of course, Remgro owns a slice already.
Yes, I think there was a standout. And maybe I think life disappointed a little bit, but Mediclinic, I think, was the best one. And if Remgro wants to take them all out and then, you know, as you said, possibly think about taking themselves off the market, they've got enough capital, and go in some sort of private equity unlisted type of route.
And taking the same process that PSG did, and probably in many cases for the same reasons that PSG put
all the unlock of this value.
Mr. Price results, a lot there. Broadly, a really, really good set of numbers from Mr. Price, which truthfully is what we expect from Mr. Price.
Yeah, look, they had a very good set of numbers. I mean, I think the share price ended up down, surprisingly enough. Yeah. I thought that was a little bit unusual, but there may be general market circumstances that are responsible for that. But yes, it was a very good set of numbers. And as you said, exactly what we expect from them. Look, any fashion retailer gets it wrong once every 5 years or so, and they buy their fashions wrong and they end up having these big sales. And, you know, maybe that's now almost due for Mr. Price because they've been doing so well for a while. But, I mean, they're expanding. They bought Yuppie Chef. They're expanding their other franchises. They want to open up 500 stores. I mean,
yeah,
that's ambitious.
Power fashion.
That's right, yeah.
To your point, it was about 4 or 5 years ago that they had a misstep on fashion. Of course, Woolies only seems to misstep, but that's a different story.
Yes.
But power fashion, taking on Pep, and you think to yourself, whoa, Pep is not an easy one to take on. But truthfully, this is the space that Mr. Price has been operating in.
Yes, and they are the leaders in that space quite clearly.
They're seeing a fair increase for credit sales, which has not been their traditional business. But my sense around it is that they are conservative lenders, and that probably isn't going to necessarily, I don't think it's going to be a pain point for them. They seem to have a fairly conservative credit book.
Yeah, well, look, we hope everyone giving out credit now is being conservative because rates are going up. And I know there's massive bad debt provisions in the banks and that, but the other credit suppliers, you know, this is the time of the cycle where you start to get the bad debts.
Yeah.
Is when interest rates go up and go up to high levels. So you just hope that their credit vetting for all people supplying credit is up to speed. But, you know, even though the economy's in, you know, terrible shape and we've got all of this inflation, the SA consumer, as long as you've got a job, is actually not in that bad a condition, surprisingly enough.
I agree with you on that, and that kind of ties in. We saw the MultiChoice results yesterday as well,
yeah.
and they used the word steady a couple of times in their announcement, and I think steady sums it up best. But you know, the South African operations there is some shopping down. But to your point, the South African, the employed South African consumer is looking okay.
Yeah, very much so.
Last point, we've got U.S. inflation coming out a little bit later, this afternoon, I think 2:30 our time. Market looking for 8.3%, that's still a high number, but I think the market, have we kind of got used to it, or are there concerns that it's not coming down?
There's still huge concerns around this, but you know, just statistically, oil must go to 220 in a year's time to have the same effect on inflation as what it's got now. Food prices must go up another 50%. And both of them on a year-on-year basis already are at absolute multi-decade, if not historic, highs. So inflation, I mean, just almost statistically, it would be such an aberration if inflation is still 8% in a year's time, because then, as I said, you'll be sitting with $200 a barrel oil to get that same effect. So it's got to come down. Whether it's this month reading or not, I don't know.
But I take your point on that. I mean, the phrase is the best thing for high inflation is high inflation, because you get that base effect, and then it's in, and you know, everything's more expensive, but it doesn't carry on increasing at the same rate it's been going.
Correct. I mean, and I actually think that in a year's time, we could have minus 30% food inflation and maybe hopefully even minus 30% oil, because the prices are high and abnormally high. You know, normally, you know, as you said, the best cure for high prices is high prices.
Yeah, and then ultimately in time, they will start to work their way lower. They're in the base. They're cooked into it. But we don't get the same sort of number in a year's time, unless, as Wayne says, things carry on going upwards at a crazy rate. Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investment. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Dina Zakola. He is from Westbrook Alternative Asset Management. Dina, appreciate the time as always. Let's just touch broadly on alternative assets as a class. I mean, I was having some look at some charts earlier this morning. Equities, I mean, almost anything that you would traditionally invest in that gives you a daily price update is having a red year to date. One of the benefits of alternative assets is that lack of liquidity, the lock-in process to it, and just the structure part. You're not having probably as painful a year from your alternative investments.
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on the show, and good morning to everyone listening. Yeah, you're right, Simon. I think it's quite a pivotal moment in the progression of alternative assets as an industry here in South Africa at the moment. I mean, what we're seeing, you know, going on in the markets is quite a bit of pain across the board. Alternatives, I suppose the thesis has always been that they're illiquid, they're unlisted. I mean, what is an alternative in simple terms, Simon? Simon, it's basically a direct investment as opposed to making an investment through some form of a listed exchange or listed instrument. So I always make the example, if you buy a REIT stock on the JSE, an alternative is a direct property acquisition as an example, and it's something that we're all very familiar with given that many of us have invested in a house. Now, to your point, because an alternative is illiquid and unlisted, we're not subject to the same volatility and these rapid price movements that we see happening in our investments as a consequence of things that might not have any relation to the actual value of the instrument that you've invested into. And so we're seeing record flows from clients at the moment.
Yeah, and I'm just chatting with Aidan McCurry about the Mr. Price results. Good results, and the market pushed it down. And yeah, if you're a shareholder, you are scratching your head. One of the benefits of this listed space is the, I want to call it the nicheness, and I think I'm making up words there, but you get the sense of that niche. Mm. And you've got one of them. I mean, one that you're looking at is essentially investing into unlisted properties in the UK. We're not investing into them. It's loans, but it gives you a fairly decent cash yield. A cash yield, and we'll come to the details in a moment, that some folks might look at and think, oh, I can do better with my tech stocks, but of course not in 2022. But tell us a bit about it. I mean, this is essentially a short-term funding. Am I correct around that?
Yeah, correct. So the asset class you're talking about, Simon, is called private debt. And effectively, what one does in private debt is, you know, it can be defined as where someone other than a bank makes a loan to a company. So we, as Westwick, as an example, are a non-bank lender. Now, it certainly isn't the world's sexiest asset class, but I think in times like this, you don't want sexy, do you? You want stable, you want consistent, you want de-risked. And so where we've been investing a lot recently is in this world of private debt. It's achieved through funds and in a structure where clients get exposure to a diversified pool of private loans in and around the UK. And I think the advantage there, Simon, is that, you know, where if you were investing, for example, in a two-year fixed deposit, you're going to be earning in sterling somewhere between 1% and 2% per annum. Mm. A private debt investment can give you, you know, at least with us, north of 6% per annum without, in my opinion, necessarily needing to take more risk. Now, in the world that we find ourselves in, where equities have been, you know, falling for a long time, inflation is incredibly high, and bonds are incredibly volatile, the question is, you know, where would you place your money without getting poorer in real terms? And I think private debt is potentially a solution that can help clients in that regard.
And I want to come to the potentially in a moment, but before we do, folks are going to say non-debt is, you know, this is almost loan sharking in a sense. Sorry, non-bank debt. It's not. Mm. It's just, you know, sometimes banks aren't. It's just not perhaps the right structure for the borrower, and that's where you can step in with good old-fashioned due diligence as well.
Yeah, so the big change in the market, Simon, was Basel in 2008.
Yeah.
And what that did is it put a whole host of regulatory requirements on banks that made their ability to extend credit incredibly difficult. They're not allowed to lend against certain types of assets. It takes them an incredibly long time to get loans approved through their credit committees. And generally, as a result of the costs involved, there's a minimum ticket size below which they just won't play. Yeah. Now, at least what we found in the UK market is that there's a very, very large, what we call small and middle market segment of really quality businesses looking for debt funding. And generally, at least in our case, that's against real estate. So you're actually secured against a property in, you know, in central London, which we think is an attractive investment. Now, many of these guys can't get debt from a bank, at least short dated debt. And that's what we're playing. So I would argue, actually, it's the furthest thing from loan sharking. It's very much what you would find at a bank, except quicker, better, faster, to use the, you know, the cliche.
and some of the key metrics, I mean, things such as loan to value, you can manage that. The building is worth, I don't know, $1 million. Perhaps you would only lend $600,000 against it, so that you've got that security. Nothing's perfect, but it gives you that sort of some sense of security in case of a default.
Yeah, so what do you want in debt? You want a quality lend with a significant equity buffer. So in our case, the average loan to value for every £1 million of property that we're secured against is about £570,000-£580,000 of debt. Mm-hmm. But you want more than that. You want to make sure that you're lending to a high quality individual. It's a very, very important tenet for us as a business is you can make the best lend to someone who's dishonest and you'll probably lose money. Mm-hmm. If you make a lend to someone who's honest, even if it isn't the best lend, that individual is likely to repay you. So it's a factor of the security, it's a factor of who you're lending to, it's a factor of the credit metrics, and then from the investor perspective, you know, we like to say this, it's very important, there's no upside in debt, right? It's not an equity investment where if your lend shoots the lights out, you're going to earn more. And so what do you want? You want diversification. And so currently we're running a portfolio of 45 underlying loans. No loan is more than 5% of the portfolio. And that ensures for a client, you know, when you go through something like COVID, if you do have loans that don't perform, and, you know, we've had them too, everyone has them,
mm-hmm.
but what's important is to make sure that a single loan that goes bad isn't going to bring down the entire investment and isn't going to have too material an impact on returns.
And this is, I mean, we mentioned, you know, that this is not the go-go stocks. This is going to give you a nice, stable, predictable return in sterling, which is an attractive point. And it fits into that, and we've talked around this before, that sort of alternative investment part of your portfolio, which is, you know, it's never an all-in type of investment whatsoever. It's a, you know, it's a couple of percentage points, maybe as much as 10 or 15 at the sort of tail end of the portfolio.
No, it's interesting. I was looking at the stats yesterday. I mean, in the first world, you know, I've actually got the stats in front of me. I think you'll probably find them interesting. Allocations to alternatives by institutions, 22% on average. By family offices, 35% on average. The Yale University Endowment, 75%. So, you know, certainly it's something that's becoming more and more interesting. To your point, private debt, Simon, I see as an alternative to fixed income or some kind of cash or bond investment, right? It's not the overall of your portfolio, it's not necessarily the biggest allocation because the trade-off is that you're locked in. You know, you're not in this world of daily priced and liquid like you're going to find in the traditional market. So the upside is you're getting a significantly higher return. You're getting some tax efficiency, which is quite nice. The downside is that you're locked in for a period of time. Where I see private debt playing a very valuable role is in a well-diversified portfolio. So you've got your high risk, you've got your low risk, and then within your low risk bucket, you're kind of going to split between the daily priced and liquid investments that you can find in the bond markets. And then there's an element of the portfolio that wants a stable cash yield that's not volatile, that's going to tick along nicely, that's not going to move around too much when things like Ukraine happen. And that's really what we've got on offer for clients here.
Yeah, and those numbers are staggering, 22, 35, and 75. I need to readjust my view. But I think your point, Dino, is well taken in that the alternative asset space is growing. And perhaps, I want to dig into this more, perhaps the sort of fastest growing sector within the investment world. Dino Sagola, Westbrook, Alternative Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
So what's happening with gold? In a year where we have war in Europe, we've got highest inflation in 40 years, we've got rising rates, we've got threats of recession. Surely this is where gold should be performing. It should be shooting the lights out. Yet here it is stuck at 1,850. There's around, it was 2,000 back in March. It had a high in 2020 of almost $2,100. And before I sort of did my digging for this thought, I was going to be like, you know, gold's failing. Gold's not doing what it's meant to be doing. Then I went and did some digging. So year to date, gold is flat. Okay. But the top 40 is off almost 7%. The NASDAQ down almost 25%. The S&P down over 15%. So maybe gold is doing what it's meant to be doing. It's holding itself. The new flat is the new exciting. And maybe it's just because I hold gold and it's, you know, all my fault because for the first time ever, I hold some gold ETFs. But I've always said, the only time you buy gold is when you close the short. That's been my statement for 20 years. But I think there's a case for holding gold. And maybe it hasn't shot the lights out, but it's held its value. And maybe that shooting's still to come. Maybe the next big move ultimately will be to the upside. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Your sense of gold, what do you think around it? Is it just old school? Is it going to run in time? Or is perhaps, as I say, flat is the new winning? It's actually up 0.8% year to date, which in this type of year is, well, that's a positive return. That's it for today. Yesterday we were chatting with Winlaba Nkubela. We were talking around the SPAR results, and they cut their dividend in order to retain cash for operations. We asked, what did you think of the results? Less than a fifth of you were happy with them, about a quarter disappointed. But truthfully, the majority said, look, it's just not my preferred retailer. And I agree with you. And that space for me in the food space, ShopRite, that's the one I hold and have held for forever and a day. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning at MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m. and, of course, podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. We'll chat again Monday. We're going to be talking Eskom.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.